Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Crisis Next Door, a weekly report on the biggest conflicts around the world. With host Jason Brooks.
Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Ukraine's war with Russia has been heating up in early 2020, a slog going on 6 years. North of Ukraine, Belarus has enjoyed a peaceful post-Soviet existence. But a growing dissonance between Minsk and Moscow could alter that tranquil landscape. Joining The Crisis Next Door to talk about that fraying relationship between Belarus and Russia is Jeff Mankoff, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow with the Russia and Eurasia Program for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Jeff, it's good to have you back on The Crisis Next Door.
Sure, thanks for having me.
You recently wrote a piece in Foreign Affairs titled, Will Belarus Be the Next Ukraine? I recall when Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko and Russia's Vladimir Putin seemed to get along famously, two authoritarian leaders in alliance against the West. What's happened to their relationship?
Well, it was always more complicated than that. As much as the political systems in Russia and Belarus both fall more on the authoritarian side, obviously these are two countries with somewhat different roles in the world. I mean, one is a very large country that has, great power aspirations, and the other is a relatively small Eastern European state that is trying to carve out an identity for itself after being incorporated in the Soviet Union and before that the Russian Empire, and you know, really having a very tenuous existence historically. So I think that aspect has always been in the background, you know, even when Lukashenko and Putin have had a more cooperative relationship. At the same time, you know, the Belarusians in particular would like to have better relations with the West, in part because that would insulate them to some degree from Russian pressure or Russian influence. But the very tightly controlled authoritarian political system in Belarus has made that harder. In the past, they've tried at various times to pursue political and trade cooperation with the EU, but it's always run into trouble over this issue of Belarus's authoritarian politics. So what's changed, I think, is that, it's a couple of things. One is that since the crisis in Ukraine began, Russia's been under sanctions and has imposed its own counter-sanctions against the West. Belarus has been a very reluctant participant in that entire process because it doesn't want to find itself trapped in Russia's economic orbit even more than it already is. And so the Belarusians have been undertaking various maneuvers to try and skirt the, particularly the Russian counter-sanctions. So they've, one of the things I talked about in my foreign affairs piece was the relabeling of goods. So when Russia banned the import of European foodstuffs in retaliation for the sanctions, Belarus would start importing them from Europe, relabel them as made in Belarus, and then sell them on in Russia, which is, along with Belarus, a member of the Eurasian Economic Union. So the most famous example of this is salmon. For a while in Russia, you would see salmon with the label made in Belarus, which if you look at a map is kind of funny because Belarus is a landlocked country. But that's, you know, that was done specifically to evade the sanctions. And, you know, because of that, Russia, I think, grew increasingly frustrated with Lukashenko, with Belarus, which it had been subsidizing through oil sales, through subsidized oil sales and direct subsidies for many, many years. And so on the Russian side, I think there was a bigger push to use Belarus's dependence on those subsidies as a means to force Lukashenko and Minsk to accept a greater degree of both economic and political integration with Russia, which is not something that either Lukashenko or the Belarusian population as a whole, you know, particularly wants. The second thing that changed, of course, is more on the military security side, which is this deepening standoff at the center of Europe, which is also related to the conflict in Ukraine. And here, Belarus occupies a kind of anomalous position because it's nominally tied to Russia through its membership in the Collective Security Treaty Organization, the CSTO. But it doesn't have Russian troops on its territory. It has rather reluctantly participated in joint military exercises with Russia that are, you know, about responding to deterring or, you know, depending on your interpretation, an attack from the West. But Belarus doesn't want to get dragged into that confrontation. It would be on the front lines of any military conflict between Russia and NATO. So it's tried to stay out of that confrontation as much as possible. But again, with tensions in Europe growing, Russia's has less and less patience for this kind of tightrope walking act that Lukashenko has adopted. And so again, I think has been using this economic dependence that Belarus has to try and extract political concessions and security concessions, but has run into various obstacles.
Outside of the obvious positioning of Belarus between Russia and NATO, why is Moscow so bent on integration? Are there stronger cultural and historical ties at play here?
Yeah, that's the other big piece of it, right? So if you think back to the Ukraine conflict when it started, Putin and other Russian elites talked about Russians and Ukrainians being one people. You know, Putin said this in his speech to the parliament announcing the annexation of Crimea. Russians and Ukrainians are one people. Now, of course, most Ukrainians don't believe that, but a large number of Russians do. And that belief in a common identity and common history, which there is a lot of common history, provided a justification, and it made sort of what happened to Ukraine more politically and emotionally significant inside Russia than was the case with, you know, many other countries in the former Soviet Union. There's a common history going back to the Middle Ages. The languages are similar. A lot of people in Ukraine speak Russian as their first language, and even the ones who speak Ukrainian, there's a lot of overlap. You take all of that and increase it, or I was going to say double it, but maybe not quite double it, but certainly increase it when you're talking about Russia and Belarus, because the histories are even more tightly entwined. You know, there's a period in the early modern era where there was, you know, something like a Ukrainian state that was independent. Again, after World War One and during World War Two, there were something like Ukrainian states. So there's a history of Ukraine existing apart from Russia. With Belarus, there's much less of that. There's a brief period at the end of World War One where there was a Belarusian republic that was a protectorate of the German army, but it only lasted for about a year. And that's really, yeah, that's really the only example of something like a Belarusian nation state. And so the historical roots of nationalism in Belarus aren't as fully developed as they are in Ukraine. So it's easier for people like Putin or various other Russian imperial nationalists to see Belarus as part of the Russian patrimony, if you will. And Lukashenko, in some ways, contributes to that because he's been a sort of anti-nationalist ruler of Belarus. You know, he mostly speaks Russian rather than Belarusian. He's cracked down on teaching and use of the Belarusian language. He banned the flag that Belarus adopted when it became independent, which was based on the one that was used after World War One, and he adopted another one that looks more like the Soviet Belarusian flag. So, you know, in some ways, Lukashenko is a living embodiment of this, you know, rejection of the narrative that Belarus is and Belarusians are a separate nation with, you know, a history and an identity and a culture that's distinct from that of Russia. Now, that's a view that's not necessarily shared across all swaths of Belarusian society, but it's one that Lukashenko and the Belarusian government for the last 25 years since he's been in control has largely adopted. And again, I think that contributes to the belief of people like Putin and those around him that Belarus, even more than Ukraine, is legitimately or historically, you know, part of this larger Russian identity.
I know that in many of the post-Soviet nations and states that older populations have long romanticized the Soviet era. Is that still true of younger Belarusians? Do they still pine for that era, or perhaps are they leaning more toward the West than their elders?
Well, I wouldn't say they're pining for the Soviet era, because younger Belarusians and younger people anywhere in the former Soviet Union don't remember the Soviet Union. This is a generation that's come of age in an independent state. And so, you know, whatever they think about Lukashenko, whatever they think about Putin, they're used to being citizens of a separate state. And I think that reality, you know, this is a state that's now existed independently since 1991, is a reality, and very few people want to give that up. At the same time, the older generation, you know, people Lukashenko's age and older, and you know, Lukashenko's not that old, who did grow up in the Soviet Union, and don't have this sense of Belarusianness, I guess. That does actually, that identity, that Belarusian identity does actually seem to be more strongly pronounced in the younger generation. You know, you see more younger people deliberately, learning to speak Belarusian, even if they don't speak it at home. There's a kind of cultural, awakening for Belarusian, ethnic and cultural identity that's going on and is, you know, much more associated with younger people who grew up in independent Belarus than with those whose formative experiences were in the Soviet Union.
You're listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks, and we're talking about the fraying relationship between Belarus and Russia with Jeff Mankoff, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow with the Russia and Eurasia Program for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Belarus does more trade with Russia than any other country, and you mentioned the subsidized oil and gas from Russia. Moscow has threatened to turn off the spigot. What would that do to Belarus, and does Belarus have an answer if that happens?
Well, that's a big question in all of this, because Belarus has, for so long, found all of its eggs in the Russian basket that, you know, it would struggle if Russia decided that it wanted to change the terms of that agreement. Now, you know, there's some wiggle room here, and in the last several weeks, Belarus has signed deals to import oil from other places. From Norway, from there's an agreement that was signed with Ukraine recently on using a pipeline that runs from Ukraine. So Belarus does have other options. Most of them would be more expensive. And since it's a comparatively poor country and one that does depend on a lot of Russian subsidies, you know, it's unclear to what extent it could afford some of those other options. And so, you know, the danger, I think, is that Belarus, Lukashenko, or some other leader finds itself in a position where, you know, it's forced to make political concessions to Russia in exchange for maintaining those economic subsidies, you know, whether that's transferring control of more critical infrastructure, whether it's taking more steps towards the political integration of the kind that Russia was pushing at the end of last year, or something else.
The West has never been a fan of Lukashenko and his authoritarian rule of Belarus, but do you get any sense that maybe there's an opening for the West to deal with Lukashenko, or would he be willing to work more closely with the West?
Yeah, on both sides. As always, the devil's in the details. You know, would Lukashenko like to have a sort of European path open for him? Probably, but not at the cost of changing the fundamental political model that he's implemented. And that's the problem, because what is on offer from the EU, you know, is really contingent on those kind of political reforms that might themselves threaten Lukashenko's hold on power. There is scope for more economic and diplomatic engagement. So U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo went to Belarus a month or so ago, met with Lukashenko, which is clearly a sign of U.S. interest or support, and promised that the U.S. would supply oil to Belarus, which is, you know, is great. But again, there's the questions about price. So there's interest in the U.S., in the capitals of Europe, and certainly in Minsk, in helping Belarus diversify its options. But in terms of the substance of what that would look like, it's always going to be limited as long as Belarus's political model is what it is under Lukashenko.
Do you think Putin fears a popular uprising in Belarus, much like the one in Ukraine that forced out mm-hmm. the Moscow-friendly government in Kiev?
Yeah, very much so. What happened in Ukraine was a real setback for Russia in a lot of ways. One, because it replaced a relatively pliable government under Viktor Yanukovych with one that was much more hostile to Russia. And the subsequent conflict and annexation of Ukrainian territory really contributed to the consolidation of a new national narrative in Ukraine that is much more anti-Russian than what was there before. Also, of course, the uprising in Ukraine on the Maidan and the fall of Yanukovych is seen in Russia as a potential model for something similar that could happen in Moscow. And of course, that is, above all else, what Putin and others in the Kremlin don't want. That's already happened in Ukraine. If something similar were to happen in Belarus, I think it would just reinforce those fears.
What kind of shape is the Belarusian military in? Does Minsk spend much of its budget on modernization and training? And how would it handle a potential fight with Russia?
I think the short answer is it would not fare particularly well in a fight with Russia. But, you know, one could have said the same about the Ukrainian military in 2014, and it performed pretty badly at first. But under the exigencies of war and facing a, you know, threat to national survival, the Ukrainian military got a lot better in a hurry.
And no doubt, Russia's military is so much bigger than Belarus's military. Curious, though, could Putin afford a potential fight with Belarus when he's already got troops in Ukraine and in Syria?
Well, it depends what one means by afford. In terms of the spending involved, yeah, probably. I mean, Russia's gotten pretty good at projecting power at relatively low cost. In terms of all the associated costs, from sanctions to the threat of escalation and the deepening confrontation with the West, and the potential for further domestic destabilization. I mean, that's a trickier question. You know, I don't think that Russia particularly wants that right now. If anything, there's more interest in Moscow at the moment in trying to take steps to get sanctions removed or at least moderated over the Ukraine conflict. And so the worst thing to do under those circumstances would be to start another conflict in Europe. Which, you know, isn't to say that if something were to happen to Lukashenko, or you know, if NATO forces suddenly showed up in Belarus, that you know, Russia wouldn't decide that it had no choice. But I think as long as it feels it does have a choice, that's not the choice that it wants to make.
How would instability in Belarus affect NATO?
It depends what type of instability we're talking about. If it's confined to Belarus's internal affairs, I think NATO would watch it very closely, would try and you know, reinforce the borders between Belarus and NATO members like Poland and Lithuania. If there's a Russian role in it, if there's political instability in Belarus, there'll almost certainly be some kind of Russian role. Then it's much dicier, because there's a lot of concern in NATO, particularly among the countries on the eastern flank, like Poland and Lithuania, about Russia using Belarus as a launching pad. The NATO's ability to physically defend those eastern flank countries, particularly the Baltic states, is relatively limited. You know, there are rotational forces there, basically, you know, one brigade per country in Poland and the three Baltic states. But in the face of a large-scale Russian land invasion, those troops wouldn't be worth a lot. And of course, to do that, Russia would most likely want to move at least some of its forces across Belarusian territory. So, you know, if there is some kind of crisis in Belarus that leads to the introduction of Russian forces, even in relatively limited numbers, that would be a cause for real alarm in NATO.
Jeff, do you think Lukashenko can hold off Russia for long? Is a union between the two countries inevitable?
Well, again, the devil's in the details, because officially Belarus and Ukraine have a union state treaty. They have a union state based on a treaty that was signed in 1999. The practical implications of that treaty are somewhat limited. Last year, when Moscow really started mooting a push for integration, it did so under the aegis of implementing the terms of that treaty, which, again, has been in effect for over 20 years at this point. And, you know, the Belarusians have continued to delay and hem and haw and one thing and another. So, you know, it looks like there's going to be some push for deeper economic integration on things like tax policy and that sort of thing. And there's probably not a whole lot that Belarus can do to prevent that from happening. And, you know, honestly, Lukashenko's not averse to all of it. But anything that, you know, smacks of political integration, that looks like, you know, Belarus is sacrificing its sovereignty, is a much bigger, is a more sensitive issue inside Belarus, and I think would be fought much more assertively. The other thing, of course, is that when the Russians started raising this last year, this idea of real political integration, it was unclear how or what was going to happen within Russia in 2024 when Vladimir Putin's presidency is up. One of the ideas being floated, and ironically this is an idea that one can trace back to Lukashenko in the 90s, was to establish a presidency of the Union State. So in addition to having a Russian president and a Belarusian president, you'd also have a Union State president. And for some folks in Moscow, this seemed like an idea to allow Putin to stay in power after 2024 without having to change the Russian constitution. Now, at the beginning of the year, when Putin gave his State of the Nation address and announced this push for constitutional change, including changing the powers of the presidency and everything else, that, to me, seemed to be an indication that they'd given up on this idea of using the Union State as a vehicle for perpetuating Putin's hold on power. So now they're looking at other alternatives for that. So if that was the real driver, then I don't think we're going to see quite as intensive a push for unification in the year or so to come.
It will certainly be interesting to see if Putin does make any moves anytime soon on Minsk. Jeff, thank you so much for taking time to join us here on The Crisis Next Door.
Sure, yeah. Thanks again for having me.
We've been joined by Jeff Mankoff, Deputy Director and Senior Fellow with the Russia and Eurasia Program for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Till next time.
The Crisis Next Door with host Jason Brooks is produced weekly.
If you have any thoughts for Jason, email him at tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com. Again, that's tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.